they all have a plan and saw this as an opportunity to accelerate it. And I think that's so important because it made me actually think about long time ago. I remember, and you actually speak about this moment as well, but there was a moment in early in your career where you had an opportunity. I think you wanted to jump over to the mobile team because it was hot and exciting. And then there was this other job was actually a little, not little, it was a lot less sexy,
right,
less interesting, but significantly higher pay. And you wanted to do the sexy job. And I was challenging you. I was like, you know, the reason why you're not even considering the less sexy job is because you don't know what you would do
with
the money.
Yeah.
And I think when you know what you'll do with the money and these types of opportunities present themselves to you, you evaluate them or you consider them very differently. Like you don't categorize them as a distraction or just discredit them as an option altogether. Like, if you know what you could do with $30,000 and you've done the math or you've confronted or you see what your parents' situation is looking like and that you could easily solve that problem in a couple of months, like, you consider those things. You don't just write it off and say, well, I could never do that or wouldn't ever consider doing that.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. And today we're talking about the overemployed trend, which means working two remote jobs.
It's a terrible name. They shouldn't call it an overemployed.
I love the name.
Do you?
I absolutely love that. Well, I think I just love the idea. Or any time a new word is just kind of created.
I know, but
I love when languages just dip on the chip,
like house hacking. It's like, so you have a roommate?
Like, I see, like, overachieving. I overachieve. I'm overemployed.
Oh, okay. I wasn't hearing it that way.
I overstand what you're saying.
Okay.
So, you know, to me, and maybe it's just the hip hop head in me that just loves the bending of language. But shout out to the people who are overemployed. If you've never heard that term before, well, this is a podcast for you. We're going to break down this trend again. This is, to me, one of the most amazingly delightful, like, empowering revelations of this so-called great resignation, this moment that we're in. To me, it is the ultimate act of entrepreneurship.
Another made-up word.
Entrepreneurship has been around for a while.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a spinoff of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't want to be self-employed,
bring your ideas to life within the workplace or within the confines of being an employee. Like,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I love it. I love it. All of the bending of language, because that's the world that we live in. But all of that to say, this moment that we're in, this great resignation, I think, has really brought to light this recent trend of people working two remote jobs. It is obviously a great way to accelerate your financial goals, but it's a decision that I think is worthy of analysis and certainly discussion, which is why we're talking about it today.
Yeah, I actually first heard about this a while ago. We talked about it in episode 25, which was about, you know, us going back and forth about whether competitive people made more money. And the Wall Street Journal was the publication who broke the story about people doing this, at least to my knowledge.
Yeah.
And their article was all about employees who had taken advantage of remote working by asking themselves, why be good at one job when I can just be mediocre at two? And so that was like the premise of the idea. But as the media does, they tended to focus on more extreme examples. These were people who were making like huge amounts of money. And y'all know this podcast is called Rich and Regular.
Right.
So now that it's been about 9 months since that article came out, it's been nice to see more regular stories start to surface.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, like, as normal as these stories sound, it's still very much a controversial thing.
People
do not want other people to know, like, outside of a very small circle of trust, that they're doing this.
And that, to me, is what really sparked it. So you're right. I do remember slightly talking about this maybe a few months ago, but what's really sparked it for me was a video that we saw on YouTube from the Bloomberg channel, and they were basically diving into this recent trend. But what was really interesting is the way that they treated these people's anonymity. It was like they blacked out their faces.
It's like witness protection.
It felt like, it felt like I was talking to someone who was in like a drug dealer or like had committed this crime and like the KGB was after them and they don't want anyone to know. know that this is what I'm doing. And from 9 to 5, this is, you know, I'm actually working 3 jobs. And like, it was a woman, but they like masked the voice. Yeah. Like, it was so bizarre. And I was just like taken aback. Like, wow, like this is so interesting. Like the lengths that people are going to. But I also get it, because I think it speaks to why doing this is such a controversial act. So we wanted to talk about that a little bit and why this is happening. And so let's just sort of take a step back. In recent years, and I think a lot of this, as you mentioned, was brought on by the pandemic and people being forced to work from home. Mm-hmm. And within that group of people, there were those that really decided to exploit this opportunity. And I don't mean to put like a negative connotation on the word exploit.
Take advantage.
Capitalize on the opportunity. Yeah. Because they realized, you know, just like how little time it was actually required of them to work this one job. And can we just stop right there? I know tons of people who admit that in their minds, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you think back to the days of or pre-pandemic, where you go into the office and shoot the shit for a little bit, and then you've got a meeting or two, and then you've got some team thing, and then you've got some personal development. And before you know, it's like, what did I do today? Like, I probably actually did like 2 hours of work. And so what the pandemic and the forced remote work situation did for a lot of people is say, you know what? Instead of watching Tiger King, Bridgerton, and like Breaking Bad again for like the umpteenth time, I'm just going to see if I can just get another job and what that life might look like if I were actually earning both or doing both. And it has worked out remarkably well for a lot of people. And so after seeing that video, after reading the article from the Wall Street Journal, we were like really fascinated and we're like, man, would we do this? And we're like, we got a lot going on our entrepreneurial side. But we're like, well, I wonder if any one of our followers or subscribers or viewers are actually doing this. And so we reached out to them and said, hey, is this something that you guys are doing? If so, would you be interested in talking to us? And we were fortunate because we actually found 3 people who admitted to doing it and would be willing to share their experience. And so this particular podcast, we're going to share their experiences with you all so that if you're interested in doing this or you just want to learn more about like how it all works, is this possible? Is this for me? You will at least have something that you can refer to as a point of reference.
Yes. So the first couple, let's call them Sam and Irene, not their real names.
Okay, but so I asked you to come up with some fake names, and Sam and Irene.
Sam and Irene.
If you're listening, Sam and Irene, that's your new name. But we're going to respect your anonymity since you didn't actually give us names that you would prefer. Just because your name is Sam.
Sam
I can't
Irene.
Wait to call
hey,
it
Irene, girl. Ooh. So they're good friends of ours.
Yeah.
They're incredibly smart and talented and funny. They're in their early 30s. They don't have any children of their own. And they're really financially responsible. They're big into personal finance. They are doing all of the right things. And they live in a suburb outside of a major city that's home to several Fortune 500 companies.
Right? I think we can say they live in Atlanta.
Yeah, okay.
Metro
they live
Atlanta
in a, they live in a that's, I was trying to I was having
we don't
fun
have to go that
creating
far.
A
we already
full
call
character.
Them Sam and Irene. So we don't like they live on Earth. Here in the Milky Way. Like, come on.
Okay. The point was that they live somewhere that has a very healthy job market,
they
right?
Do.
This is not even though these are remote positions, they live somewhere that, you know, has a healthy job market.
Yep.
They also have in-demand skills, which attract high rate wages, and they're true knowledge workers, aka white collar workers, aka they think for a living, right? Their work doesn't require any sort of physical tasks other than to think about stuff.
Yeah. Their fingers move a lot. A lot of typing, a lot of meetings,
a lot of correcting,
a lot of,
you know.
Yeah.
Logic.
Building presentations
and
sharing ideas.
Right.
So true to your point, white collar work.
Yeah. Meaning it doesn't have to be time bound. You can think at any point of the day.
Yeah.
Build this thing. It can be asynchronous
as
much as you want.
Yeah. And we're not saying that to diminish what they do.
Like
we're former white collar workers ourselves, but you know, we just wanted to call that out. So we actually ended up having a really long conversation with them about this because it was a casual one. They're friends of ours. We saw this video. We was like, man, did you see this? We shared it with them and we were just talking about it. And we knew that they'd done this, but they were like, oh, yeah, been doing this for the last couple of years. Like, oh, yeah. I mean, this is how we've been able to do a lot of different things. And so and I'll go in a little bit more detail. So Irene works for a management consultant company. She's been doing that for a number of years. I don't remember what Sam works for.
Something with data.
He's had like three or four different jobs. I mean, yeah. And at some point he's worked two or three at the same time. And then we were talking to him. He was like, yeah, I've got another interview tomorrow. Like he is really racking it up. And so we really just wanted to dive into why would you do this? What are you doing? How do you manage it all? Like, how do you structure your days? And so we had like maybe a 45-minute conversation with them. And so we wanted to share some of the insights from their experience and what really motivated them, which primarily Sam, if we're being honest, to do this work. And there were four key observations, I think, that I pulled from that conversation. The first was that they were just admittedly annoyed with repeated years of being passed over for bigger roles, right? They, like a lot of people, work hard, super smart, super talented, go for the promotion, don't get it. They try again the next year after doing or tweaking the things that may have come in a performance review, didn't get it. And you, after a while, you just start to say, you know what, like this is not necessarily fair, but this is also kind of frustrating. But you're trying to balance that frustration with your own understanding that, you know what, you're actually still doing well. You just desire to do more. And so a lot of why they would consider this is because it was a bit of a bypass, a workaround. It was like, you know what, the only, like, I don't want to start a business or something like that. I might start a business, but it might take some time for that thing to grow. Right. In the interim, what I can do is just get really efficient, get a little scrappy, get another remote job that literally doubles my income, and then take that a step further. The second part was kind of in the same vein. They were like annoyed with management. And I think a lot of us, going back to being a part of the Great Resignation or this moment that we're in, people are really frustrated with the processes and reviews and just sort of the bogus treatment of work culture and toxic work environment. So part of their motivation, I think it's safe to say that this was a bit of an act of rebellion. The third is that they have very specific needs for that additional money, right? So they don't have children, but they do have parents abroad that live in a country that's fallen on some really hard times. And so they use the extra income to support family, to support friends. I mean, he's even gone so far as to say, man, I've been tracking this conflict in my country, and I identify people sometimes, and I just DM them and give them money. Right. Like, I mean, it's amazing. And, that actually leads into a crypto conversation because he has to convert the US dollars into crypto in order to support these people. Like, it's just amazing. So that's some of his motivations. And I think the last one is that he's an active participant like us and a huge fan of the FIRE movement.
Yes.
And he has plans to walk away with his wife at a certain point in time that is significantly earlier than the traditional retirement date. And so when he thinks about why he's doing this, it's really to accelerate the plan or the plans that they have for their life and to support the people and the beliefs that they have. And I think it's really admirable what they're doing, but I'm curious, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think Sam and Irene, I'm just going to keep saying y'all's names. Sam and Irene are great examples of just normal people who are doing this for really good reasons. Yeah. They have time, skills, and a financial goal that makes sense. And when I think about them and how much sense this actually makes for this season of their life, it makes me wonder why this isn't something we are screaming from the rooftops the same way we do side hustles or other hacks. Working two jobs is the norm for many families, particularly if you're an hourly employee, or perhaps you work shift work, or maybe even you pick up some part-time hours on the weekend. But it's normal. If you ask any educator, it's completely normal that they pick up other jobs during the summer, during winter break.
Yep.
Completely normal. It's not something they hide. But when it comes to knowledge workers specifically, there's this inherent secrecy, and I don't know which side is driving it. I don't know if it's the employers or the employees or a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, it just speaks to this lack of trust between corporations and the workforce that they employ. And, you know, if we can't be forthcoming about something that doesn't harm either of us in theory, then like, what is this relationship?
It's a fascinating dynamic because I think it's both. I think it's that employees, particularly high earning knowledge workers, I think there's, in order to be public about that, it's almost like an admission or a stigma attached. It's like, well, I need the money, right? And that can be frowned upon in corporate environments. It's like, well, what do you mean you need the money? We pay you more than enough money. Aren't you managing your spending? It's like, yeah, but,
it hasn't really kept up with the price of
it
things.
It hasn't kept up with the price of inflation. I have other considerations and other things. But again, I've been in these environments, and so I can see how it why there might be a negative association with actually working more than one job. On the other side, when I think about employers, I think what it really speaks to is not just the loyalty that they expect employees to have, but it's almost like the degree of control they want to have over you. It's like, no, you're not just an employee. I control or have full carte blanche control over your knowledge, right? Yeah. Like, I don't want you to start a business outside of this. I don't want you to do any side hustles. Right. I just want you to be completely devoted to this job. I want it to occupy as much time as possible.
Yeah. And other countries have those kinds of arrangements, and they literally create contracts for employment where employers can outline all of the expectations and what they're going to give you in exchange for meeting those expectations. In the U.S., we just get an offer letter.
Right.
And it don't have no, like, there are company policies, but there's not some legally binding agreement between us that you get to own every ounce of my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, really interesting thing. So shout out to Sam and Irene. We love you guys. We're proud of you guys. I would love to see your tax return at the end of the year. because at the end of the day, you know, they are managers that are pulling in senior level executive salaries without anybody knowing it. So you guys are awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. And I can't wait to see where it takes you. The second person that we interviewed that's working two remote jobs actually preferred to be anonymous. But she did choose a name for herself, and her name is going to be Lenore.
Her name is Lenore.
I love these names. Lenore. Everyone's picking like golden girls.
Yeah, I don't want you to know nothing about who I am.
Left field names. Lenore.
Shout out to the Lenores out there. You do Barbara. Not have a left field name.
Okay. If I ask her for a middle name. Marge. All right. So Lenore. Lenore is 35 years old. She lives in the DMV area, which is basically the Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area. She works in pharmaceutical research. And so for her first job, she was a project manager, a project manager for a large tech company that produces cloud software. So think like Amazon Web Services or I think Oracle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Oracle. I believe that's what they do. I don't know. But then she added a job on top of that. So she then became a clinical researcher at a big pharmaceutical company. And so these numbers, I'm sure for a lot of people, are going to blow your mind, except for those who live in major markets. So for her first job, she was actually earning $108,000. And for the second job as a clinical researcher, she was earning $115,000. And she's been doing this for almost 4 years. And over that time period, the first job has jumped from $108,000 to $135,000. Wow. And the second one has jumped from $115,000 to $141,000. So this could be a combination of pay increases because she's doing well, or cost of living adjustments, or some combination of both. But I just want to stop right there, right? So the combined income from the first few years of doing this was $223,000. And over the 4 years, that's increased to now around $276,000. Wow. Now, the DMV, Washington, D.C. area, is one of the most expensive areas to live in. So I also want to put this salary in context. I'm a big fan of NerdWallet. They have some really quick cost of living calculators. There are others that are out there, but I just plugged in these numbers to kind of put that in perspective. So if you're saying, oh my gosh, like, you know, especially if you live somewhere that's a low cost of living area, that like numbers might sound like absolutely absurd to you, but let's just put it in perspective. So if you compare the cost of living and that salary to if she were living in Atlanta, the conversion would basically mean that for her to earn a comparable amount of money in Atlanta, meaning the $223,000, which is what she started with, she would actually just need to earn $141,000 in Atlanta to have that same quality of life. So that just sort of speaks to just how much more expensive it is to live in the Washington, D.C. area.
Which that $141,000 you could technically earn with one job.
Correct.
Could get to.
She technically could, right? But right now she lives in D.C. That's likely, again, given her professional skill set, there's probably significantly more jobs that live there. Yeah. There's probably also
the over $200,000 job market is
for sure
leaner than you know, the under $200,000, especially in high demand cities.
For sure, for sure. And I think given what she's doing in her field, I think there are likely a greater saturation of well-paying jobs in her given field. So I think it actually makes sense for her to stay where she is and continue doing what she's doing. So we asked her and a few other people like the same question just to get a little bit more insight into their thought process. And so we asked her what her motivations were. Like, why would you even consider doing this? And I'm going to quote, she said, stumbling on the FIRE movement was her core motivation. I don't enjoy the traditional 9-to-5 environment. I want to have more control over my time while I'm young to do the things that I enjoy.
Yes.
I want to leave the traditional workforce by 45. Again, she is 35 now, so 10 years she's looking to leave.
Me too, girl.
Right? And she did not feel that she could do that on one salary while living in a high cost of living area while still having fun, because my fun is expensive.
Yes.
Yeah. So shout out to Lenore. She has expensive taste and she is not.
Expensive fun.
Expensive fun. And it is what it is. But hey, we're proud of you. So we asked her how long she planned on doing this. And she said she'll do it really as long as she can without sacrificing her health or her free time. I'm pretty efficient in getting everything done early, so no one is checking on me constantly, seeing what I'm doing, and that there's a lot of autonomy in the roles that she's in, so long as she is able to meet her metrics and her timelines.
And I think that's key, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because not everybody can do that. And again, this goes back to management culture, right?
This goes back to skills development. Like,
correct.
Go back to the upskilling, you know, episode. And, yeah. And know, like, if you're not someone who whose skills are able to get things done, hit metrics efficiently and timelines in minimal time, like, you might just need to tweak your training a little bit.
Yep.
Learn some new skills or softwares to help you get things done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we asked Lenore just some final thoughts, like, you know, what else might we want to know or what might you be willing to share? And she said, I don't have any children. Or any children at the moment. So she's really hoping to do this for herself in order to accelerate her financial independence journey. She has no debt, which is awesome. And she's a first generation immigrant. I can guess where she's from based on her last name, but I don't want to. She says that she finds herself on occasion supporting her parents from time to time, but she uses her first job salary to do that. And in addition to supporting her parents, she has a separate emergency account and brokerage account for them that they do not even know about. Her job is rewarding, but also demanding. So she can't spend 20 to 30 years doing it. But the only negative of it all, she says the job is very rewarding, but also very demanding. And so she certainly can't see herself doing it for 20 to 30 years. But the way she views that second job is like her version of being married and living on one income.
Yes. I love, 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 love how she framed the second job.
I do too.
As being married and living on one income, because it flips the idea of being in a dual income household on its head.
Yes.
Right. If we want to stretch language a little bit, like, that's one place we can start, because a lot of people hear that and think like, oh, I got to find me a partner.
Yep.
Like, let me go get me a boo.
Yeah.
But she's like, actually, you just need to find you a job.
You got
honey.
Time.
Like, you just
if you don't have a boo, you got time.
Right.
So here's what you could be doing with your time. And, and again, like, I'm sure it makes it difficult for her to have the time. If she were particularly interested in finding a partner, it would be really difficult for her because she's working quite a bit, working these two jobs. But there's a bit of a trade-off here. She's able to live her life, accelerate her financial independence plan. She's probably going to retire before she's 50 years old. She can support her mom and her dad. She's got money to allow them that they don't even know about. Like, she's doing some pretty amazing things. So shout out to Lenore and everyone like her. Any other thoughts or reactions to
what
she's
doing?
Well, it
does make me wonder real quick before we go to break, whether you would ever consider getting a remote job to do in addition to Rich and Regular, right? Because this really has me thinking. Hold on, hear me out, hear me out. So we pay almost $950 a month for health insurance, which equals roughly $12,000 a year. I'm rounding up to include copays, prescriptions, things like that. But if you could find a gig that didn't require anywhere near 40 hours a week, didn't disrupt your current business and covered your health care, plus left you with some extra coins, would you pursue it?
Basically, just to cover the cost of health care?
Well, you would have extra money left over. Like, I'm sure most remote jobs are paying more than $12,000 a year.
Yeah, I think I would entertain something like a contractor role.
Oh, like a short-term
role, very clear beginning and end, very clear compensation structure, something along those lines. But I don't know that I would go to the extent of
becoming
a full-time employee for the purposes of, like, if I'm going to do that, then I'm just going to become a full-time employee. And then I'm going to try to do what Lenore's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be right back in a few after some words from our sponsor. Okay, so the third person we interviewed was actually a recommendation from a friend of ours, Steve. Steve is a personal finance expert, a financial therapist, and money Reiki practitioner. Him and his partner, Jess, are actually the creators of Journey Black Home, and right now they're digital nomads, which is something we've talked about on several episodes. They travel the country exploring little-known or celebrated Black history, supporting Black businesses, and all kinds of cool stuff along the way.
Yep, shout out to those guys. They just got featured by Airbnb.
Yes.
Partnered with Airbnb. They have the single largest list of Black-owned Airbnbs in the country. So if you ever just Google that, it'll take you straight to them and all the great stuff that they're doing. So shout out to Steve. But this isn't actually about Steve.
No.
We were connected to the person from Steve.
Yes. And before we jump into it, I want to say that Steve comes from a really forward-thinking family.
He does.
Not only is he brilliant, but his brother is well-known in the Black tech field as a VC and entrepreneur. And his sister, who is the person we actually interviewed, is also working two remote jobs. She goes by Tip. She's 31. She lives in Columbia, South Carolina, and she's a graphic designer for a lighting company. Mm-hmm. And in recent years, she's added in several jobs from freelancing to remote contract work, which then turned into a full-time position with a biotech company. But in her own words, she said, "I started off as a remote designer for the lighting company, but when the push came to go back to the office, I resigned. Mm-hmm. I liked my remote flexibility. I had some cushion in my savings, so I took a couple of months off from corporate and pushed my focus to freelance. That's when I started with the biotech company, and that turned into a full-time position."
Yeah.
So with this additional job, she went from making roughly $57,000 in the lighting position to $92,000 in her new full-time position.
That's a huge, huge jump.
Right. So in this case, she actually had one job, added a contractor job that turned into a better full-time position. Then she added in the freelance work, which brought in $3,000 a month. So her income today is approximately $92,000 in base salary, $36,000 in freelancing, for a total of $128,000.
Yeah, which
it's almost triple. Again, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you go back to and again, so much of it, I think, just comes from being willing to explore, right? Being willing to walk away, see what else is out there and what you might be able to do. And so if you're listening to this and I get it, you love your job, you love your company, like, that's great, but you owe it to yourself to see what else is out there, because I'm telling you, this trend is really, really picking up. So going back to the first example, I think it's also important to put this in context in terms of cost of living, because this situation is actually a full reversal compared to the Washington, D.C. Example. Again, using Atlanta as a baseline, if you're earning $128,000 in Columbia, South Carolina, and then you take that income or move to Atlanta, you'd actually have to earn about $145,000, because Atlanta is 14% more expensive than Columbia, South Carolina.
Right.
And again, that's important, because even as you're thinking about whether you could do this or not, if you're listening to this, you're listening to the example of Sam and Irene and Lenore and now Tip, like, just keep in mind that you don't have to do it where you are. You could technically move to a lower cost of living city. You could move to Columbia, South Carolina right now, get two remote jobs and still be able to do this, right? So this is something that, again, I think so many people really need to consider. Would you be uprooting and shaking up things in your life? Yes. But I really think you owe it to yourself to do the math to see what you might be gaining by having new income earning. Because most people, I would imagine, if you're earning $57,000, you can't imagine a world where in 2 years you're likely earning almost three times that, right? But it's not until you start piecing things together, taking advantage of the moment that we're in, that you then are able to give yourself the kind of promotion that would likely have taken you 10 years to get, assuming you were one of the few people that were on that type of career trajectory, and you're able to earn that income right now.
Mm-hmm. So when we asked her what her motivations were, she said that she recently moved back to Colombia and in with her mother because their father had recently passed and she wanted to help with expenses. She also wanted to have more flexibility, more investing, more traveling with her money and not just pay off debt. So we asked what she was doing with the surplus income. And she said, basically, she manages most of her mom's expenses and have been helping to renovate her parents' home. Mm-hmm. She's been paying off debt and she's been investing. She plans to do this for about 9 months and will probably continue working both jobs and taking on new clients as long as her schedule permits. She loves having multiple remote jobs. Not only is she able to pay off her debt faster than before, she's able to assist family without putting a financial burden on herself.
That's key.
And she also has more financial flexibility, allowing her to put more opportunities. She also has more financial flexibility, allowing her to find more opportunities for her to continue to grow personally and financially. Like, this just makes sense to me. I feel kind of crazy because I'm like, gosh, a lot of people could be doing this.
Yes.
Like, obviously making exceptions for those of us who may have children who are small and other responsibilities or may not be able-bodied or, you know, there's a number of times where this just isn't an option for you.
Right.
But if it is, it's worthy of consideration.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting to me is, you know, one, we know some of these people or know enough about their backgrounds to be able to draw some common threads. And there are at least three that I've identified. And so the first one is that they all have a plan and saw this as an opportunity to accelerate it. And I think that's so important because it made me actually think about long time ago. I remember it, and you actually speak about this moment as well. But there was a moment early in your career where you had an opportunity. I think you wanted to jump over to the mobile team because it was hot and exciting. And then there was this other job was actually it was a lot less sexy,
right,
less interesting, but significantly higher pay. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to do the sexy job. Mm-hmm. And I was challenging you. I was like, you know, the reason why you're not even considering the less sexy job is because you don't know what you would do
with
the money.
Yeah.
And I think when you know what you'll do with the money and these types of opportunities present themselves to you, you evaluate them or you consider them very differently. Like you don't categorize them as a distraction or just discredit them as an option altogether. Like if you know what you could do with $30,000 and you've done the math or you've confronted or you see what your parents' situation is looking like and that you could easily solve that problem in a couple of months, like you consider those things. You don't just write it off and say, well, I could never do that or wouldn't ever consider doing that. I think the second thing that's interesting across all three of those stories that we've shared is that all three of them are supporting their parents financially.
Yep.
Right. Which I think is, again, going back to the media, that's not a part of the story that these people are saying. And I'm not going to say that this is reflective of the broader set of people in the country that are doing this. But I do think that there's something to be said about the number of people who are doing this. It speaks to the importance of the sandwich generation, which is something that we've spoken of before, which is the people who are financially responsible for supporting both children and their parents. But on a larger scale, it just speaks to the retirement crisis that we're in. There are a lot of people who are in their 30s and 40s right now who are really busting their butts at their jobs because they're not just responsible for themselves. They're also financially responsible for their parents and trying to figure out their own retirement in the process. And so this presents an opportunity for them to be able to do that in a way that's efficient. And the third one, which you're going to have to stop me because you know I get really passionate about this. Because we know who these people are and we know their backgrounds, more specifically, we know that every single one of them are first-generation immigrants. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is very telling because I have long said that there is something to be said about, especially within the Black community, that there is a difference in the mindset and the willingness to adopt this way of thinking that Africans and Caribbean Americans are willing to, or just, you know, Caribbean people are willing to undertake with respect to the FIRE movement. And so this sort of really brought that home for me. And if I ever write another book or like go deep on a project, I can guarantee you that this is something that I really, really want to dive into. If you agree or disagree, we would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
But I think that there's something to be said about their willingness to do it compared to African-Americans. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying that there's something to be said there because I continue to find a disproportionate number of people who come from other countries that are far more willing to do this than I do people who were born here and only have family that are from here.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. We heard different stories, different cautionary tales, different tips on how to be successful and how to be financially responsible growing up. But at the end of the day, I think this trend is great for everyone. And it low-key has me thinking about my own 2023 plans to see if this is something that I would ever consider doing. I do think there are a couple of things that people should watch out for. And they're the same things that I would recommend in general as generic career advice. I think the first is signs of burnout and stress.
Yeah.
The people we heard from seem to be managing their time and energy well. But we know that workplaces can reorganize and you can end up doing multiple jobs, multiple people's jobs, working for a really toxic boss or a toxic department.
The bar can change very quickly.
Very quickly. So just pay attention to those signs of burnout and stress. Don't be so focused on this financial goal that you lose sight of your health.
Yep.
The second is just lifestyle inflation. Again, the people we spoke to are using the surplus cash to pay down debt, to invest, to put their money to work. I don't know that doing this so that you can have a nicer apartment or a fancier car necessarily makes sense. Like, I don't know that you would do this, pursue this just so you can have more and better things. Just make sure that there's a purpose behind it and that you are really watching that lifestyle inflation so that this actually becomes a financial benefit for you.
Yeah.
And then the third piece of advice is to begin with the end in mind. This is the advice that we regularly give as well, like with the 15-year career that we talked about in last week's episode. I like that most of them are saying, I plan to do this until.
Right.
Defining your until is important and can help you get through the times when it does start to feel taxing or overwhelming or, you know, just something like you may not want to continue.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the other thing that I'll say, I guess we said it, but it was kind of unsaid. None of these people have children, right? And that's not to say that you can't do this if you don't have children. I think you can, right? Because honestly, if you're earning more money, in theory, you could outsource a certain degree of your parenting. You could then say, all right, well, then with this additional income, what, you know, you may not necessarily have, all of it going towards debt elimination or investing. You might say, yeah, I'm going to hire a nanny, a traveling nanny, a chef. I'm going to do all of these things.
Send my laundry out.
And the net gain is still maybe $10,000 or $20,000 that you can then use. So maybe you're not, you don't have full access to the $50,000 that you may have earned in additional income, but it's still on paper a bit of a win. It just requires you to redesign your life a little bit.
Right.
And so it's certainly something to consider here. I will say this, and I have mixed feelings about, I should say I don't have a fully cemented point of view on this, but there is something to be said about whether or not this is ethical. And I'm not talking about the notion that people are being deceptive or that they're not as loyal as they should be to their employers. But I think this is a case of people who are qualified for certain roles. And you could argue that they're taking more than their fair share. Right. There's no rule that says you can only have one. To your point, lots of people do it. But in this case, I think there are probably some people who feel like, oh, that's not fair. Right. Like I went for that job or wanted that job. And the person who got it actually already has a job. Like I could see a world where some people feel like that's not necessarily
fair. I can see
that.
I think that's a very outdated narrative that somebody is taking other people's jobs.
Yeah.
When you look at the job data and you align it to the skills data, there are more jobs than there are people with skills to fulfill them.
Right.
And so it's a bigger problem, which is why we keep talking about upskilling. We keep talking about tech literacy, that the reason why people may not be getting the jobs they applied for isn't necessarily because another person got it. It's because you just perhaps we're not the best person for that job or you're missing a skill or a level of experience. And I get the, you know, it can be a catch-22. It's like, I can't get the experience if I don't have the experience.
Right.
But like, I just, the idea that people are taking jobs away from other people just feels like a very dated narrative.
I agree. And I think, you know, more than anything, what this is an indication of more employees reclaiming their power back from employers.
Right.
And saying, hey, like, you know, right now you have the ability to fire me, to lay me off, to downsize me, to add more workload, to even slash my pay because yeah. now I'm considered remote. And I think what this does is it really just puts employees in a position of power to earn significantly more income than mm-hmm. they would have if they just relied on an employer.
It's a safety net.
It really is. So yeah. I think it's there's nuance here, but hopefully at a minimum, a lot of people are now considering it. And if they can do it and pull it off without a hitch, then I would say go for it. Final thoughts.
All right. So my final thought, and this may be controversial, but my final thought is that it doesn't hurt to try.
That's not controversial. Say that to our son. He's 5 years old.
I know, but this is still talking to people who are like blurring out their faces.
Oh, okay.
Like, it doesn't hurt to try. Even if you weren't looking for a second job,
yeah.
we've always advised that it's important to pressure test the value of your skills in the broader marketplace. In other words, you should be regularly applying for jobs, expanding your network, and possibly even interviewing to understand what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same applies here. I recently read that over 40% of Americans are looking for new jobs right now. And if that's you and you're already remote and you have a job that doesn't necessarily take 40 hours, right? It wouldn't hurt to apply for another remote job and just see what happens. And if you so happen to get an offer before you resign from the first job, just think about it.
Yeah.
Just think about it. See how the first few weeks at the new gig are paced. They tend to be a little slower. They tend to be a little less active, right? See if you can handle both jobs for a month or two and then take that surplus money and pay down debt. No one is saying you have to do this for years like right. the people we heard from. Even just a couple of months of overlap can be what you need to help offset inflation or max out your IRA account. Or, hell, take a vacation.
I was just about to say, take a dream vacation
yeah.
before you decide to have children because you don't believe you'll have a chance to do it before then.
I'm not saying, no one says you have to do this for years. But, like, if you happen to get another job, just hold off if you're able to. You know, if your company doesn't strictly prohibit this and they're not competitors. Like, hold off.
I'm the devil on the right shoulder.
It's like,
saying,
do it.
Apply. My final thoughts are similar. I think this is a great idea for most people, again, because most people are in debt. Most people have underfunded retirements. Most people are likely struggling with parents who have underfunded retirements themselves or have medical debt or other issues. Like, more money solves a lot of problems. And so if you are able to do it, I think you owe it to yourself to explore this as an opportunity. There are a couple of things I think you should keep in mind. Kirsten already listed a few. I have a few of my own. The first is to have a system that separates like one job from the other. I think one of the other downsides to this great resignation that I've read a lot about, and maybe you have too, is the increased surveillance that employers are having over their employees. They're monitoring your clicks, they're monitoring what you're clicking on. And so if you're going to have one job and they give you a laptop, keep them all separate, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have another phone, another laptop, another printer, another whatever it is. Don't use any of, just make sure that you're only using that equipment for one job, right?
Yeah.
For that one company. Don't get caught up in a situation where someone sees something else, it sets off a warning to them, and then all of a sudden you lose out on that opportunity. That is happening significantly more than you think it is. What we've learned after watching that video and after speaking with people is that this also means that you may likely need to reevaluate your work area or your workstation, because you're going to have two laptops, two printers, two of everything. And so you really want to think through what kind of equipment and what your workspace needs will look like. Or in some cases, you might want to also just build in having like an offsite office where you're actually doing this. Second is to thoroughly evaluate your financial benefits and think through which ones you're actually going to utilize. You're not going to have two, maybe three 401k plans to evaluate. to healthcare benefits, to life insurance policies, and all of these things. And so make sure that you're thoughtful about which ones you really want to join and be a part of. This might mean looking at the premiums, looking at the underlying coverage, looking at the fund options if we're talking about a 401k, et cetera. And if that's the one that you think you're going to want to be a part of for the foreseeable future, then that's the one that you want to choose. And the third one, and we've spoken about this, but it's really about having a plan. Don't just walk into this because it seems like a fun thing to do and because you heard Rich and Regular talking about it on the podcast. Give it some thought. Think about exactly what you're trying to gain from this, whether it's I want to make sure that I can invest $50,000 this year, or I want to see if I can just completely knock out my student loan debt this year. You owe it to yourself to at least see what this looks like, what it feels like. And if it's too much, you can always walk away. So those are my final thoughts.
I love it. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. I know several of you are on your way to LinkedIn and Indeed to try to find some new jobs. Mm-hmm. But before you get there, if you like what you heard, please stop by the ratings and review page and leave us a 5-star review. We will see y'all next week.